Hi, everyone. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. And we are discussing our fitness article yesterday and today. So we're so happy that you've joined us. And today I have with me in the studio...
Pauline here. I enjoyed talking about this topic yesterday. Glad we get to continue today.
So, Pauline, tell me, what is one thing that stood out to you about yesterday's article?
Well, I really appreciated that the author took the time to kind of explain his background and personality and how that has affected the way he approaches health. I really relate with that. Not really wanting to do this hard work of tracking everything and wanting to believe that, you know, you can just kind of... you know, feel it out and trust your body. But then, you know, his sharing kind of his process of coming around to this idea of tracking. And I feel like I'm kind of going through a similar journey as I, in my middle age now, I'm beginning to realize like, oh, I need to start thinking about that.
Well, Pauline and I are in the same boat here, but we do have a tracker among us, and that would be...
Simon. I do like tracking.
Welcome, Simon.
I like graphs. Numbers, all of these information things, yeah.
So did you like yesterday's article?
Yeah, it's an interesting topic. I mean, this article specifically is focused on tracking for fitness, but of course with smartphones and the technologies that are part of our daily lives, you can track a lot of things in our lives.
Right, and you do track fitness somewhat, don't you?
I do, yeah. I track many different dimensions of my life.
He does. It's true.
Yeah.
And we also had some interesting phrases that we looked at yesterday. I particularly liked the wiggle room phrase that we used. If you have wiggle room for something, it means that there's some flexibility. If you're presenting a project and you don't, it doesn't necessarily have to be a really, really tight, specific way. There is wiggle room, which means you can change it a little bit. And another one that I liked is sugarcoat. And have you ever gotten some bad news or kind of depressing news that's been sugar-coated?
Just recently, I had laser surgery, and the doctor was like, okay, you're just going to feel a little bit of pressure now, which I think was sugar-coating it because it was super painful. It was not pressure. So that would be an example to me of, like, saying it in a way that sounds nice, but it doesn't change the fact that it was very, very uncomfortable.
Okay. And... what about you, Simon? Are there any terms from yesterday that kind of stood out to you?
I suppose the useful one is take a toll. When you take a toll on something, it means you have a negative effect on it. So you make it harder to do something, or you make it costlier to do, or you somehow slow down the performance of that thing.
Okay. And any in particular, I know I gave you one sugarcoat, but are there any other terms that we talked about yesterday that stood out to you, Pauline?
Take a toll was also one I was thinking of. I was thinking we might talk about that when we say, like, oh, having so much pressure at work lately has really been taking a toll on my personal life. So we do use this in a lot of different situations.
Yes, we do. And we also learned some new terms that we use in the field of health, like macronutrient and... that means that it's a kind of food, usually a protein or a carbohydrate that you need in large quantities in a diet. And your doctor will tell you if you're missing some macronutrients in your diet. And so we see that this, author, decided on the advice of his doctor that he needed to start tracking his activity level, his heart rate, and his sleeping habits. So he bought an app to do that with. And today we're going to look at three of the five that he talks about. Yesterday we looked at calories add up even when you might not be aware of it. And the other one was he wasn't moving as much as he used to because he moved to a driving city from a walking city. And that's one I think that we all need to be careful about in our lives. It's very easy not to walk. So let's turn to page 35. If you have your magazine, you can follow along with us or find it on your digital device, and we are going to begin our reading.
Three, monitoring your heart rate comes in handy. Despite years of working out, I've never paid attention to my heart rate. But when I started seeing it flash on my Fitbit along with my step count, I was intrigued. Using the Carvenin formula, I found out what my heart rate should be when exercising at a moderate 124 to 150 BPM and vigorous 151 to 178 BPM intensity. It helped me make sure I stayed in that moderate zone on long walks and entered the vigorous zone for at least 20 minutes, 2 times per week.
So our author here says that monitoring your heart rate comes in handy.
And this is nice that we get to start off our article right away with a really useful phrase.
Mm-hmm.
To come in handy means something is useful.
Right. So what have you found that comes in handy? I bet your tracking device comes in handy, right, Simon?
That's right. I just think it's funny that you said a really useful phrase comes in handy, which means it's useful.
Yes.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah. I think a lot of different devices come in handy. I actually just use my smartphone for most of my tracking. And so it's probably the most useful and most valuable thing I own.
There you go. So it comes in handy. Well, despite years of working out, this author never paid attention to his heart rate. And actually, do either one of you?
Nope.
Sort of. So I measure
it. How do you sort of do
well,
that?
I measure it like probably once or twice a week. But that really is very different than tracking your heart rate.
I could never really figure it out, so I've kind of just ignored it. But I know it's something I should be doing.
I just go to the local 7-Eleven. You know, they have like the public blood pressure kind of machine. It tells you your blood pressure and your heart rate.
I didn't know that. 7-Eleven is amazing.
And also, a lot of pharmacies have them, too.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. Although, also, apparently, like we were saying yesterday, Fitbits have gotten a lot more advanced. So now, if you buy a newer Fitbit, not only will it track your step count, it'll also help you with measuring and tracking your heart rate, which is very nice.
Well, if you take a measurement once a week, you're really just finding out you're not sick or you don't have like heart disease or something, right? But you don't get enough information to find out like how well you're really doing or how to improve or things like that.
Right. And it seems like in this context, our author is really talking about how he's used it to help measure his exercise and get a sense of how rigorously he is working out and how long. So that stuff means you need a lot more consistent data to do that with.
Well, we have to remember that our hearts are muscles and they need exercise. It's one of those things that we really kind of tend to forget about. And here he said that he was intrigued when his heart rate started flashing on his Fitbit as he was looking at his step count. And my Fitbit doesn't do this, so he realized that he wanted to find out what his heart rate should be, so he used this Carvenin formula.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't really know what the formula is, which is to say I don't know how to write out the mathematical formula for it, but we're basically told here that it's obviously a mathematical formula that uses your maximum and resting heart rates, and so your maximum heart rate is if you run as fast as you can for as long as you can, and then you check your heart rate. That's your maximum. That's the fastest your heart can be beating. And your resting heart rate, which is, you know, the number of times your heart is beating a minute when you've been sort of resting for maybe half an hour. And then it also includes your age and the intensity of the workout. And I think the idea here is that it's giving you a range that your heart rate should be in for different fitness outcomes. So for example, if you're gonna walk, you kind of make sure your heart rate is within that range to make sure that your walking is benefiting your heart.
Sure. And the nice thing about the day and age we live in now is that the internet is such a wonderful tool. We don't need to find the actual mathematical formula and calculate it all on our own with pencil and paper anymore. You know, I'm sure there are plenty of sites online where you could just input a few things. In fact, it might be that the Fitbit or some of these apps will do it for you because they're going to be measuring your heart rate and that stuff as well. So I don't think it's probably quite as intimidating as it sounds.
I should say, too, that when we were talking about the Carvenan formula, I mentioned beats per minute, which is actually one of our specialized terms here is BPM. And beats per minute just means the number of times your heart beats or, you know, goes dun-dun every minute, right?
Okay. And he found out, he used this method or this formula and found out what his heart rate should be when he's exercising at a moderate and vigorous intensity. So moderate is kind of an intermediate one, 124 to 150 beats per minute, BPM, right, Simon? And vigorous intensity.
Right. To me, I think of the difference between maybe a brisk walk, probably being moderate, to a run. It would be vigorous. You're doing really a great deal of exercise. It takes a lot of effort. It's very intense.
So it goes up quite a bit, actually. We can see the BPM here for him was 151 to 178 intensity, or beats per minute intensity. So that's quite fast, actually, for a heart. And then you use the formula to determine what your resting heart rate should be. So, you know, the way that we use this is it helped him make sure that he stayed in the moderate zone on long walks. And, yeah, you have to be careful how long you let your heart stay in a vigorous mode. And you want it to be in a moderate zone for a longer period of time. And then when he wanted to hit the vigorous zone, he did it for at least 20 minutes two times a week. So that's not that much, actually.
Yeah, actually, that's encouraging to hear. That sounds more doable mm-hmm. than I maybe thought that they were going to say.
Yeah, I thought it was, too. It's very encouraging. And so, you know, maybe it's something that we all want to do, you know, find out what your heart rate should be when you're exercising at both of these moderate and vigorous intensities. And, you know, when you go out walking or run on your treadmill at home, you know, you can be aware of this.
Plus, I think it's just nice to have so much information about your personal health. I think about my father, who's had a lot of heart issues later on in life. I wonder how useful that would have been for the doctors had he had some years of tracking heart rates that much that they could have looked at and really seen how that was changing. Maybe they would have noticed it quicker. So I think there's also maybe some other benefits to this as well, medically speaking, to have such accurate records of your health, especially your heart.
Yeah, it seems like we are finding out more and more that is helpful to our health and staying healthy as we age. Well, let's go to number four now. Are you sleeping as much as you thought you were?
Four. I wasn't sleeping as much as I thought. This may have been the biggest surprise of all. Most nights, I fall asleep by 11:30 or so and wake up around 8 a.m. That should add up to at least 8 hours of sleep, right? Not exactly. Since the Fitbit monitors your heart rate, it can tell which stage of sleep you're in, light, deep, or REM, as well as how often you wake up during the night. In my first week of tracking, I was shocked to see I logged only 6.5 hours of sleep on a night when I was in bed from 11 p.m. to 8 a.m. Turns out I didn't actually fall asleep until midnight and woke up several times during the night, so by the time my alarm went off at 7 a.m., I only accumulated 6 hours of restorative sleep.
Have you ever had a shock about your sleeping habits?
What kind of shock?
Well, I mean, this person was very surprised at how much he wasn't sleeping.
I know I don't sleep enough, so no, I am not surprised by how little I'm sleeping, I guess.
Especially with a new baby.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, for this person, he thought that he was getting a lot of sleep, and he found out that he wasn't at all. So Okay, what time do you guys go to bed about normally?
I probably am similar to this guy. I probably go to bed around 11, 11:30, and then I get up around 7:30.
Midnight.
Wow.
Yeah.
I used to go to bed at that time. Now I go to bed earlier, 10:30 to 11. I just find that I'm exhausted and sleep until around, well, I get up. It doesn't matter if it's a weekend or not. You know, your body is like set to get up at a certain time. So it's like 6:10 and I'm like wide awake. It doesn't matter.
My body has never done that. Everybody talks about that all my whole life. Come a weekend, I could sleep till 11 o'clock in the morning if I wanted.
You're not middle age yet.
Thank you.
So he goes to bed around 11:30 or so and wakes up around 8. And that really should add up to at least 8 hours of sleep, but his Fitbit told him differently, right, Simon?
That's right. It told him he was getting only 6.5 hours of sleep.
So we see that he used his Fitbit to monitor his heart rate, which is how he found out that he was only getting that much sleep, and he thought he was getting a lot more, right, Pauline?
Yeah, which is very interesting. I think of myself as someone who gets a lot of sleep compared to many people. But now this makes me curious to know what kind of sleep that really is. Again, I tend to be the kind of person who wants to just base it on my intuition and my body. I feel like I generally have a lot of energy. So I think I am getting enough of the REM sleep, of that restorative deep sleep. But I guess I don't really know without having tracked it.
Right. So here we see that there are stages of sleep, and it's called light, deep, or REM. We call this rapid sleep REM, and it's a period of very deep sleep where it identifies it here as your eyes make small, quick twitching movements, but it's the deepest part of sleep that we get, and we need a lot of that in order for our body to really be restored. And so your Fitbit here can tell you how many hours of that you're getting every night. Now, Simon, you don't necessarily think that we need that much REM, right?
Well, to be honest, I just think this is kind of confusing. Like, he sort of tells us that he's fallen asleep at 11:30, and he gets up around 8. So that's like 8.5 hours of sleep, total sleep.
Mm-hmm.
But he says he only gets a portion of that is actual sleep, according to his Fitbit. So I assume he's waking up and not remembering he's waking up or whatever. But I don't know if that is how different that is from just going through the sleep cycles. And I also don't know how long you're supposed to spend in each sleep cycle. So they're throwing a lot of terms around here. And I think a lot of this is based on this idea that most of us have that you're supposed to have 8 hours of sleep a night. But, you know, he's got 8.5 hours of total sleep, so that seems okay to me. But he is writing here with a tone like he's not getting enough sleep because he's not getting enough really deep sleep, I guess.
I don't think light sleep counts as sleep.
I think it depends on if you're going through that cycle, right? Because that cycle will take you from deep sleep to lighter sleep. But I guess one thing that I had thought about that I could see this being really helpful if you are someone who feels like you're going to bed at a decent time, getting up at a decent time, but you just notice that you never seem to have enough energy, that it's always extremely difficult to get up. Maybe then something like this could really help give you a better sense of maybe you're only getting 3 hours of REM. Maybe you're stuck only in a light. And, well, you know, I know Simon and I are both a little confused about what the exact ratio is okay. I know there is a point where if you are not getting any REM sleep or if you're only getting an hour or two, I think everyone would agree that's not a good thing and something's wrong. So maybe it can help, at least with extreme examples of maybe people will recognize that there's something wrong in their sleep patterns and maybe they need some more help medically with it.
I mean, I think you know when you're not getting enough sleep. Like, there have been times when I've been working a lot where, you know, if I sit down in a quiet place for 30 seconds, I can just fall asleep and take a nap, right? So you know you're not getting enough sleep then. But if you're, you know, spending a good portion of the night in bed and you're not feeling tired all the time, I don't know that I would worry about it too much.
Well, then you're probably in REM more than you think you are. But here, it's also talking about, I think that this term is much more applicable than than when in talking about REM, and it's talking about restorative sleep. And that, of course, that's connected, but restorative means that you feel better or energetic if you're feeling tired or ill. So, you know, we need to restore our bodies when it's depleted of energy, and that's really what this is supposed to be. So, you know, you can find out about how many hours of REM they recommend that you should be getting. I think it depends upon your age as well. And you can look up and find out all this kind of information. But the interesting thing here is that maybe you're not getting as much as you think you are. I mean, if you can fall asleep at the drop of a hat, that's a saying in English, you can do something extremely quickly, then, you know, it might be something that you want to think about. Well, let's continue. We've now talked about monitoring your heart rate and getting the right amount of sleep for yourself. And we have one more that we're going to look at now.
Five. Exercise is not a magic bullet for weight loss. It's a truth I've heard time and time again. You can't out-exercise a bad diet. What you eat matters way more than how many calories you burn or steps you take. Plus, research shows people often overestimate how many calories they burn when working out. Tracking my daily stats helped me finally accept this fact.
I like this term they use in the subtitle here. Exercise is not a magic bullet for weight loss. Mm-hmm. And what is a magic bullet?
I think sometimes we also say magic pill. It's just the idea that it's not magic. It's not the thing that's going to solve everything for you. Exercise isn't going to solve all your problems for weight loss. There's other things to think about.
Yeah, so a magic bullet then is something you do very easily that just fixes all your problems.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Everything that they've been saying about health recently is it's more important what you eat than how much you exercise. So we can eat a bag of chips and think, oh, I'll walk an extra mile and get rid of those calories, but it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, especially I think the big point to look at is that it's not that exercise doesn't have really great benefits for us health-wise, but I think a lot of those benefits are going to be more about your muscle strength and your lung capacity and all those things that are very important, but it doesn't have to do with numbers on a scale. It doesn't have to do with your weight loss.
Right.
I think this is speaking about a very popular myth that's out there, this idea that, like, if you just exercise enough, you can eat whatever you want.
Well, I like the second, well, after the colon here, it says, it's a truth I've heard time and time again. You can't out-exercise a bad diet, as much as I would like that true.
Yeah, I like that phrase, out-exercise. We use other words like this where you put out in front, like so it outruns someone means to run faster than them. To out-exercise would be to exercise so much that it doesn't matter your bad habits with eating.
Right. So it says here that what you eat matters way more than how many calories you burn or steps you take. So there are what we call empty calories. And what kind of foods do we find empty calories in, Simon?
Junk foods, I guess I would say. I guess the idea is basically you're eating food that tastes good but doesn't really make you feel full. So you can think of an example of maybe eating fast food and then you're hungry again an hour later. That would be a meal full of empty calories.
And also very low in nutrients, right? It doesn't have a lot of vitamins or other positive nutrients for you, but does carry a lot of calories and fat and, like, the not-so-healthy parts.
Like that bag of chips I keep mentioning. That's because I just read some statistics about people in the States, and the major cause of their weight gain is chips. It's not sugar. So it's kind of interesting. And those are definitely empty calories. There are a lot of calories, and they do absolutely nothing for you.
Of course, there's a lot of studies on pop as well, which is like the sugar side. It's also
yeah,
really
I know that combined. Because when you eat chips, you don't eat them alone. You drink a soda or some pop with it, right?
Is not empty calories. We've been talking a lot about empty calories.
Mm-hmm.
Oatmeal. There you go. That's my health tip for the day.
I love oatmeal. I think that's a good call.
It'll fill you up. and won't make you fat.
It is, yes, it's very good for your heart as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we see here that research shows people often overestimate how many calories they burn when working out. I think this is called false hope.
It's true. It's because we feel tired after we worked out. And we're like, oh, I'm tired. Now I need a snack. That's fine. I just worked out.
Right.
Yep.
I think this is, you know, we fool ourselves a lot. We think, oh, I'm exercising so much. Certainly I can have that candy bar. But probably not.
Yeah, it's actually shocking how your calories are burned over the day. Like, you burn most of your calories by doing things like thinking and breathing. But walking really doesn't burn that many calories. Yeah.
That's so unfortunate.
I know. It's a terrible, terrible reality. What did we call it in our title for this article?
A stark truth.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a stark truth.
That doesn't mean you can all sit at your desk and think.
Well, again, though, I think the point is that maybe we need to get away from thinking of exercise as the thing we do for weight loss, but to think of all the other benefits that it has. It has to do with wanting to have energy in life, wanting our hearts to be healthy mm-hmm. into later age, wanting to be active. You know, those things are important, to have strength and energy. But it's not about a magic bullet for weight loss.
Well, once again, let's take a look at the five that he discovered when he tracked what he ate, that calories add up even if you're eating a healthy diet. And, you know, you need to check and see if you're really moving as much as you should. And monitoring your heart rate comes in handy, and check your sleep, and also realize that exercise is not a magic bullet for weight loss if you're trying to lose weight, and so you might want to adjust more what you eat. So we hope that you enjoyed this fitness article, whether you track or don't track what your activity and your eating patterns, and maybe you just want to try it for a little while to see if you're on target for what you think you're doing and what is accurate. When we hope that you'll join us again for another article here on Advanced Radio. Bye for now.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.